Good afternoon, good Friday afternoon, good payday Friday afternoon, and welcome to Home Run, your drive time show on Eagle FM. And we hope you haven't started, brilliant, genius financial advice coming out of West Africa. Beware of the junction where the weekend meets your salary, for that is a very dangerous junction. Not pointing any fingers, just giving some random financial advice now.
That is Helmut, guys. That is purely Helmut. That is just Helmut. Not even Dwight is going to attempt throwing in a 5 cent there. That is just Helmut.
I have the right to defend myself.
So from fun, eh?
Before they even attack me, I have the right to defend myself.
Don't
even though I'm the one that started the attack.
Why you just...
That didn't end well. I didn't want to go that direction, I swear.
Yeah, it's early days. It's early days. The Friday hasn't even started yet.
The Friday hasn't started. Not the, the professional Friday is coming to an end. The social Friday is just beginning.
Yeah. For those of you guys that... whose junction is that salary and weekend?
Yeah, for those of you that do chilling, and believe me, it's not easy for those of us that do gaming either. Friday evenings, that's when there's something we call unemployed lobbies. Now they start coming out of hiding. Those guys will be showing you flames.
Unemployed lobbies. Is this now a different morphosis from the asset forfeiture squad, guys?
No, unemployed lobbies. You know, in Call of Duty, is what we call those guys. That's sort of like they don't have jobs, so they play the game the whole day. So they have mastered each and every single trick in the game.
That is true.
Now, for those of us that just want to, I had a crazy week, so I just want to play a game or two to relax. The stress that's going to come out of that relaxing mission. It's a bad one. But today we bring you yet again another report. And, like I pointed out earlier this morning, and I think a lot of you have noticed, that we actually love reports.
Mm.
Yeah. Reason number one is plausible deniability. We didn't write it.
Second also is in terms of that you can literally see the direct, not criticism, because criticism is tinged with
yes, some it has sort of, a negative connotation.
Yeah, it has an emotional attachment to it. Yeah. When you look at a report highlighting and saying, listen, it doesn't seem that you guys are following this particular legislation, which it seems the three mining companies that were assessed in this discussion, just so that we highlight this, dear listeners, even though our poster says through mining, ultimately the report just focuses on gold mining companies.
Yeah.
And it mentions three gold mining companies. Once again, it's not our investigation. It's a discussion that the Office of the Auditor General obviously blessed the National Assembly with. And ultimately, we took the opportunity of blessing ourselves with that knowledge.
You know, when I was going through this report, right, what I pictured the politicians turning into a song. It's part?
Are the politicians singing the song? Or is someone else singing the song?
I know Namibian politicians.
Yeah.
Oh, this is going to become chorus really fast. That's the second page. Oh, that second page. I know. The point I'm trying to make is...
the one of the executive summary.
The one executive summary about, this company owns this much. This company owns this much. This, Namibia only owns this. Oh, no, this part? Oh, boy.
Yeah.
I know if I was a politician, I would be like, thank you very much, Office of the Auditor General.
But this is also the particular documents, Hamoud, that not every person, not even a journalist, can go and request even.
Mm-hmm.
Because it takes another government agency to try and understand what one government ministry, what their role is in this discussion.
Yeah.
Now, we labeled our poster as beneficial or mineral beneficiation.
Yeah.
Now, mineral beneficiation, Helmut, is a policy that exists. They mention another policy here in this report known as the one of the particular legislations or documents that they had to assess. I just want to get it. It's on page one of the executive summary that says
The Mineral Prospecting and Mining Act of 1992?
No, it's below that one. The Mineral Policy of Namibia 2003. But I have to insert here that since the window of viewing has been from 2020 to 2023, the Auditor General's office did not include the policy, the joint policy by Ministry of Mines and Energy and Ministry of Industrialization and Trade regarding mineral beneficiation.
Yeah.
Now, I did that policy analysis back in 2023 when the first discussions, obviously, of, you know, how are we going to benefit from the oil and gas? And remember, this is now from 2020's particular discussion when, 2022, when the oil and gas deposits in the south of Namibia were now, you know, were coming about, the Total and the Shell particular activities.
Yeah.
Now, that is oil. This report looks at gold. However, there is that joint policy that has not been factored into the discussion. It doesn't highlight the Auditor General's office. They don't highlight why they didn't consider this particular policy document, because it's something that came out in 2020, 2021, 2020, in that same period, which obviously should have fallen within this particular scope as well, because they cite one policy document, the rest are acts, and they measure from 2020 to 2023. Now, the mineral beneficiation policy document between these two ministries is literally one that now speaks the new discussion, the new perspective. I'll use the word narrative of what Namibians are now asking broadly more about, because we have to try and change the picture of 500,000 people out of 3 million that have jobs, that have the opportunity of spending money in a consumer market sense in Namibia. Vis-a-vis the other scope of, you know, people, you know, the ones that ultimately have to make the investment decisions why they are investing in Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
Because those people don't count as being employed. They are doing an activity. They are the ones that will employ people. So if you're trying to wonder, okay, so how does the guy that establishes the business, How do you label them as? Do you label them as a as an employed person, being employed by themselves or not? Because we ultimately know that they are the investor,
mm-hmm.
whether they are local or international. Now, this is where things get tricky, because these three gold mines that were assessed in this report
mm-hmm.
have got a mixture, a joint venture template to it.
Yeah.
There is an international investor, and then there's a local investor. And the template looks weird. The reason why I say it looks weird is because it highlights firstly, and that's why I first start on the ownership discussion, a majority position by international investors, or by the international investors. In all three examples that are set out, how much should I mention the names of these companies?
Are we sending them an invoice?
Okay, no. So, if you know who these three gold mining companies are, dear listeners, just
actually, that's also an incentive for you guys to get this report. Thank you. More of a motivation.
Yeah. So, it was highlighted weird particular ownership structures. Now, it's not weird in an international trading sense, but any Namibian that doesn't understand multinational corporation operations, how multinationals try to set up in various economies across the world, is that they usually try and enter through local partnerships, which is the joint venture avenue, obviously.
Yeah.
The discussion here shows one of 80% in one side, a 90% in another side. The other one is a 92 point something, which is about a 7.5% ownership by a Namibian component.
Yeah, 92.5, that is, you know, is the one that's owned by multinationals, and
all three.
7.5 is the one that's owned by Namibian company.
Yeah.
And you have the second one with a 90-10 split. Obviously, the lower one is the local ownership one.
Yeah.
And you have another one with a 90-10 split.
So they all basically are the same split, 90-10.
Yeah, and the ownership actually, turned this whole paper into more like, more like vodka for me, especially, the second page where they, where it points out that furthermore, the auditor observed that, one entity, one entity is owned 100% by, by one, mine that's mentioned on top here. And then, which in turn holds 100, they sort of like, a mesh of ownership, just something that you'd expect from the, you'd expect from the corporate world. And this is, you're basically looking from, from an operating company to a holding company.
Mm. Yeah. But it also highlights specifically how an international investor can have multiple stakes in a local Namibian endeavor. Now, the endeavor can be the sector.
Yeah.
And the multiple stakes could obviously be in, entities that have different operations in the Namibian, in that same specific sector,
yeah.
Which that furthermore actually explains, because they don't highlight where, what kind of resource they're trying to extract. It just adds on specifically that this particular corporation is also an ultimate parent company of both the one gold mining entity and the other one, which you mentioned earlier, has the 100% ownership discussion in it. Now, you and I, technically, Helmut, in a way we can mention the names, but, for us to keep the peace, we can only highlight that it's the only three gold mining entities in the country.
Okay, but look. This is where I think, to start, a great point, to start from is, this is where I think, where a lot of us now, don't like the, more like the overall operation of, or how multinationals operate, because things can get very spiderweb-like. Because in terms of, in terms of who owns one. Now, whoever came up with holding companies was a genius. Because the holding company, of course, it's the British.
No, not the British. The British one side, it was the Crusaders.
One more time.
Those Crusaders, what's those?
The ones that were running around converting everyone in the name of Jesus with their sword.
They're in the Middle East, yeah. Do you know what they did? Do you know what's the vehicle that they use?
What's that?
The trust. The trust is, back then in medieval times, was about you appoint someone to watch over your estate and your possessions.
While you are busy,
lobbing off heads and converting people with your blade.
Didn't have to make it boring. But
I mean, yeah, so that is the particular, dimension that it takes, because they highlight that is the mechanism often used in the world.
Yeah.
Now, then there is because the UK is busy with non-domicile citizens or people that live there who will now be part of the wealth tax discussion in the UK, which was approved last year and obviously starting to take effect in this year. And I read one South African outlet highlighting that South Africa's richest woman could return back to South African shores after 15 years living in London. But that is another discussion in terms of how do you tax the rich versus the whole working and middle class that ultimately are the ones that are footing the entire tax bill in your country.
Like, that's a difficult question.
Yeah, but like I said, that's a different talk.
Yeah.
To this particular discussion.
And it's also a complicated one that literally all the Western governments are still dealing with. How do you tax the rich? But for this one, on the other hand, if you look at ownership. Ownership is it's an interesting way of looking at how multinational corporates basically operate. Mm. And now let's just look at the recent projects that we have that are still under more like in the rudimentary stage of their investment, like the green hydrogen, for example.
Yeah.
Ownership, from the look of things. One thing that I've learned from the green hydrogen initiative is that it's, I mean, it's, it's basically depends on how much money you're investing in the business.
Mm.
That's how big the stake you get. The less you invest in, the less you get. So I think, I think this is one thing that is, that's one thing that's very important to put in mind. That, no one just wake up one morning and decide, you know what, let's just split my company 50-50.
Yeah. But that also was the other particular discussion, Amud, that also took place in the Namibian economy.
Yeah.
If you remember Tipig, and then the other one was, it was Tipig and, how could I forget it? Nief. No, not Nief. Yeah, Nief. Namibia, the national,
Economic Freedom Fighter.
No, not the party.
Well, you said Nief.
No, Nief is WEF.
Oh.
You're talking about NEFF, the party.
Well, you said
Nie. Yeah. But I pronounce it like in Afrikaans, like cousin. Like cousin. You know, the male cousin.
See Nief. The problem.
Yeah. That Nief discussion in a Namibian context,
mm-hmm.
That was known as the New Equitable Economic Empowerment Framework. It's actually NEEF, not NEE, NEEF. That particular framework, Helmut, was about promoting equitable and balanced ownership of businesses in Namibia, which is the thing that you just described right now. Saying, you know, one day you wake up, you started an endeavor 100% yourself.
Yeah.
You wake up and poof, 50% of it is owned by another guy who probably never invested anything.
Yeah, you're going to go like, okay.
Yeah. Now,
did I miss something?
Now, the NEEE framework was more broad-based as opposed to the discussion for today in the mining sector scenario.
Yeah.
But we are also slightly cherry-picking, dear listeners, because this particular report actually goes a little bit broader. Why I say it goes broader is because they try to understand, they use legislation and policy to try and understand as much of just the subsector in the mining sector. So what is the subsector in the mining sector? They started off with an ownership discussion, but they don't go into who are the Namibian owners. That's the first thing they don't do in that first part that we started off on. Then they asked the next question after giving us the details of these three mining entities, these gold mining entities. What does the Ministry of Mines and Energy have based upon local beneficiation partnership and something else? Let me just get that section. So they note specifically in the dimension of no, it's not that one. In the dimension of, okay, I went a little bit far here. In the dimension of mineral policy compliance, so that's under the policy compliance there, that the ministry, the audit, could not find that the ministry could not provide supporting documents for local participation, beneficiation, mm-hmm. research and development policies. But I told you just at the start, there literally is already such a policy document, which probably could mean that for some reason, either the ministry's guys did not know that they had this joint policy document
that would be scary.
Yeah, it would be scary. But remember, the Auditor General also says they don't make an assumption. They don't make a conclusion.
Final conclusion, with absolute certainty.
Yeah, they don't go sketch a picture or interpret a picture for you.
Mm-hmm.
They just depict and illustrate.
Dealing with what you're giving them.
Yeah, they just depict and illustrate what they were given.
Yeah.
So the scenario could probably be, what you and I can infer, is that literally the ministry's guys from Mines and Energy forgot. I will use the word forgot. Put forgot in inverted commas. Yeah, I know, Helmut. I can see. You guys should see the face that he's pulling here. With the forgot phrase.
That's because I have a better one. They say, what's this thing that they go, accidentally on purpose.
Accidentally on purpose. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Accidentally on purpose.
Accidentally on purpose. Yeah. Because look, if you have a monthly salary and then you forget, the question is, what the heck are we paying you for? That no. can, yeah, that's why I'm not going with the word forget. Well,
I mean, they were asked questions. They were asked for these documents, you know.
Yeah, I know. We had another situation. We had another, what project scenario?
Yeah, but remember, that was a that was standing committees, guys.
Yeah.
So they have their way. If you looked at, remember, these two reports are formed in two different scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, the standing committees, guys, it can be, you can call your local MP if you know he sits there in the National Council or in the National Assembly. You can call the guy. You can drop him a WhatsApp directly. These are the bureaucrats of the government that are investigating, or not investigating, but they're literally generating a report of other bureaucrats in the government, in the same government.
Don't you just love it when that happens?
And they are told, don't approach this with a bias. Mm-hmm. Approach it like a professional, without an emotion. Be objective. Highlight what your hypothesis is. Now, the hypothesis is the weird thing here, Helmut. That's why I loved yesterday's report.
Yeah.
Was it yesterday? No, the day before. Wednesday's report. The one about the agricultural discussion. Ministry of Mines and Agriculture. I loved that report. Do you know why? The hypothesis was direct on the report. The hypothesis said, and it was a pretty broad hypothesis, but you could literally see how they could follow the hypothesis in terms of train of thought. But when you start off with the hypothesis of this report, now this is where I have a criticism of the Auditor General's office when they did this report.
Mm-hmm.
When you start off with the hypothesis here, Helmut, the hypothesis is one of compliance audit report. So it says an assessment on the legal framework and awarding contracts and licenses. But the key findings speak about ownership and speak about local participation and beneficiation on pages 1 and 2 of the executive summary.
Yeah.
Now, I'm still trying to understand. In the landscape of local participation, you must locally participating because you're on the ownership register. You're already participating, even if you're a silent party with a very small say in the day-to-day affairs.
There are a few things. Again, this is where this way it's very safe to look at this and go like, because if you look at let's take a couple of steps back to ownership.
Yeah.
You have the first one for 92.5 to 7.5 split.
Mm.
And then the 7.5 is the one that's owned by a Namibian entity.
Mm.
Now.
And then the other two that are the 10% are also Namibia.
A Namibian entity. And then you have one, 10% of, Namibian owned, and you have one, because all I'm reading here is this percent Namibian owned, this percent Namibian owned.
Yeah.
Now, the entity itself is mentioned, but then, that owns a large chunk, but the Namibian part that owns the small part, you just got, by a Namibian. Now, obviously, maybe I'm not getting the phrasing properly, but the question that keeps popping up is, you just mentioned the other one. Why not mention this one too?
Exactly. Which is what I also, I kept hammering my head on.
Because like,
why would you only identify the majority stakeholder?
But not the minority one. Yeah.
Who are we protecting, for example?
I don't get it.
Yeah, which is also another dimension, specifically on that same ownership discussion, because in many cases, remember from the oil and gas, from former President Hage's Geingob's famous statements of, what's that term that you like saying, Helmut? Well, technically, the oil is not ours. And, Namibians went ballistic. I immediately could understand because.
Not technically. Legally.
Yeah, legally. But technically, I can understand. Remember, I'm the individual sitting there and wondering, I can understand because, the guy that showed up with the money is the guy that calls the shots. The guy that showed up with the money is the guy that called the shots.
This is not very different from a family gathering in December.
Exactly.
The one that shows up with a vrupa, even if they are the last born.
Even if they didn't buy anything, they just have the vrupa. They didn't buy anything to the to the party.
Financially, they are the, even if they are the last born, financially, they are the first born.
Yeah. Because they've got the vrupa. They've got the shiny item. Now, we all know how that works, you know? The shiny item syndrome. Shiny item syndrome, not just, you know, it's not just that all the best flies are attracted to you, obviously.
Nope.
Well, it's partly that as well, but also that, people want to be seen with you and your shiny item.
Absolutely.
In your little castle. Before I embarrass myself, let's get away from that analogy. So, the hypothesis itself focuses on the legal frameworks of things.
Yeah.
Now, the dimensions that you and I obviously zoned in on, the guy that owns the money is the guy that calls the shots. Now, we can literally see this in the ownership structures. There is, and this is also where I leverage off my dad's knowledge sometimes, even though, you know, he's been deceased for almost 10 years. He used to highlight, Helmut, when it comes to mining, there is a cost ticker that runs every minute. It's the same thing also in large operations of construction and other particular, you know, earthworks kinds of activities. In many cases, a lot of the companies realize, and this is how commercial activity is generated. They realize that it's better to hire heavy earth moving equipment than to buy them. No, to own them.
Yeah, buying and owning, hiring. Yeah, like even oil rigs. A lot of oil companies have just come to realize it's better to hire one than own one.
So the local,
they are insanely expensive.
Yeah, the local beneficiation discussion, because Namibians, and this is now the everyday Namibians, for example, that listen to our talks that we've had. We get fixated because I myself also, my first the idea in my mind starts off from the activity there where the site is.
Yeah.
But we don't realize that local beneficiation can be a discussion of like what James Manupe from the Green Hydrogen Project has always explained in all his engagements nationally and internationally, and even the one time that I interviewed him. Local beneficiations, its description is one about, there's the activity, the core activity.
Mm-hmm.
Now the other activities around that core activity can also be about local beneficiation. So if you're the catering guy and there's a catering contract out there from that activity, you are locally benefiting from the core activity's economic process. Do you remember when I said the equipments that are on a rental agreements?
Mm-hmm.
There's one company here in Windhoek, actually three of them, but there's one of them that that I always see a lot. They rent out all kinds of earth moving equipment, Helmut. All kinds of stuff, and I know you've seen them before.
That's just their business model. They just rent.
They just rent it out.
There you go.
And it's per hour. It's not per day. It's per hour. So that's a 24 hours invoice. If that thing drives to your work site, let's say it drives to your mining site, Helmut. It's a 24 hour invoice.
Holy
because God. It's per hour that the thing is standing there with you. Per hour. So when you ask the question of the risk factor in terms of the management of your assets and the management of your costs, let's say management of costs, you are asking the question in terms of what kind of costs do I want to be associated to the project that might be a burden. For example, if you realize that, you know, and this is like pre-operation phase of things, you realize none of the guys that hire or rent out heavy earth moving equipment have the equipment that I need for the activity that we want to do. Let's say that's the mine. And you now have to ask them, guys, how are we going to approach this? Can you bring in something from South Africa? That's going to be an extra cost. Ad break, guys.
Are you still buying data hoping it will last? Then switch to Paratus. Buying gigabytes is so old school. With our mobile LTE prepaid packages, you take charge. As we invest in time on our network, enjoying the freedom of uncapped data. When you buy a 1-day, 7-day, 14 or 30-day package, you get uncapped data usage. For the duration of the package, no matter how much data you use. Explore our range of Paratus mobile LTE prepaid packages and enjoy the speeds of up to 10 megabytes per second. And most importantly, remove the uncertainty about how long your data will last. Contact us today at 083-300-1000 or visit our website at www.paratus.africa/Namibia. Terms and conditions apply. Always with
him, Paratus. Great news! Impact just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just $36 Namibian a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Past the hour of 5. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM.
Yep. And we are taking a very... We won't be any kinds of good cop, bad cop, bad cop, bad cop, good cop scenarios, because you can literally jump on both sides of the fence and be accused of the opposite role by yourself, based technically. The reason why I point that out, Helmut, is because... Since this report only cites the gold mining sector within the overall mining sector, they selected three particular operations in Namibia, but the third one is not yet up and running.
Yeah.
It's not yet up and running, and then they asked the question specifically on local participation, beneficiation, and ultimately, you know, how does it take things, how do these enterprises take the activity that they're commencing in or that they're conducting, and how does it add on to the overall discussion of capacity development, transference of skills, ensuring that local communities benefit from whatever activity that they're conducting. And we are back to the scenario, like the micro analysis of what happened with the UIS supposed illegal mining report of that National Council. Was it? Yeah, no, Standing Committee of the National Assembly. Where it was, we here came to the conclusion that it was poor communication. Because the community didn't know who these foreigners were, because it was only communicated to the traditional authorities.
Yeah, not just that. You know, the guys that previously operated the left pits that was causing harm either directly or indirectly to the community.
Yeah,
which is why when the new guys showed up, the communities already had negative sentiment towards anyone that was operating in the area because of how the previous guys left everything without rehabilitating the land.
And they weren't also explained in terms of or involved even in terms of. What role does this activity play in, firstly, interfering in the daily lives of the local community?
Yeah.
Secondly, would any of the local community participate in the activities, and how, and for what duration? None of that ultimately was communicated, even in the previous operations and even as the current ones were trying to set up shop to operate there.
Yeah, the lithium, quote-unquote, illegal mining, quote-unquote, illegal lithium mining in Iwis is one of those stories of somewhat, especially on the side of the, you know, of the companies that were operating there, of mistaken identities, like, someone getting into a fight, and then they in some way resemble you, and then the authorities looking for them come, run into you, then are like, oh yeah, there he goes, you get him. Now, at this point, at this point you are going, What did I do?
Yeah.
Because that's what those companies, and this is, one is Chinese, one is Namibian.
Mm.
And interesting enough, the Namibian one in that report was mentioned.
Yeah, but that was now local politicians.
Trying to.
And guess what? They spoke, that standing committee could speak to all sides.
Yeah.
They even spoke to the Namibian partner. The Namibian joint venture partner. And they even spoke to the Chinese majority stakeholders. Now, it's the same. You can obviously see how we're trying to compare that report that went into a micro analysis of a situation and with its hypothesis versus this report and its hypothesis. And this particular hypothesis indicating to us, no, we're just looking at legal frameworks and stuff like that. But they already missed out on one policy document, local beneficiation policy of 2020, thereabout, which is supposed to span the next 10 years, Ahmed, that policy document. I know that document because I read that document front and center 2 years back, and I was like, so we had something like this? We had this thing?
You know, this is a look. This is a very, at least from a legislative standpoint, more like policy standpoint. The report also includes.
Yeah.
And they are, should you call it not an investigation, more like when they compile the report. Take duration and application for renewal of exclusive prospecting licenses. Now that one, fingers are going. A lot of fingers are going towards the Ministry of Mines,
yeah.
Because the report indicates that the audit found that in terms of duration and application for renewal of exclusive prospective licenses, the audit found that out of 13 EPLs renewed, 7 adhered to renewal regulations, while 6 exceeded the 7-year renewal limit without necessary ministerial approval.
Yeah.
Additionally, the required reduction of exploration areas upon renewal was not implemented. Now, from the surface, which is why I'm looking at it. I don't have the expert eyes to look at it in detail. From the surface, this looks like more like an oversight issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then when I'm looking at it from an oversight standpoint, and I'm seeing a lot of parallel that I can draw from this report and a lot of other reports that have been produced, on a lot of public entities, both executive office ministries and SOEs. And also, by the way, our regional authorities have been criticized for being terrible at doing what? Compiling financial financial reports. Political parties, problem, financial reports. Ministries, problem, financial reports. Just this year, ministries and SOEs were criticized again, like for the millionth time, for failing to submit their, some submitted their procurement plans, but that was like, less than 50, I think less than 50 of them, 40, 44, somewhere there. And, the majority of those ones that submitted, that submitted their procurement plans, only a very small fraction of them that submitted within the due date. And a lot of them didn't even consider submitting. And now you see, this is again becomes an enforcement issue. So there are a lot of flaws that can be pointed out here. And obviously one comes from not the policy itself, because we have the regulation, because it says here that 6 exceeded the 7-year renewal limit. So there is a legislation that indicates when you are supposed to renew this license.
Yeah.
And if the police ran into you with an expired driver's license, care to explain?
Or an expired vehicle license.
Expired disc.
Yeah.
What happens to you?
Firstly, your car can get, if it's the disc, your car can get impounded on the ground, on the spot.
Like right then?
Right then. Because the car would not be, what do they call it, licensed to operate on the road. The second scenario is the user, the license to you. If you are not licensed to drive the car, the potential is there that you could either, the extreme being you could face, you could be take arrested.
Find yourself in a holding cell.
Yeah, in a holding cell. The lowest would be you get a warning and a direct ticket to you, the person or the owner of the car, with obviously being the condition that you've got to meet the requirement of achieving your license in order to become licensable. You know, you are approved to drive on the roads.
Yeah.
So that's just the setting regarding the two items regarding driving on the road.
The reason why I went to that equivalent is because the law enforcements have legislations in place which everyone operating a vehicle on the road must know.
Mm.
And if you are found actually in violation in any of these legislations, the authorities are the police officers or any of Namibia's security classes that come across you, operating a vehicle without a license, they are obligated by law to, to hold you accountable.
Yeah.
Now, again, this is why we have what? Roadblocks. So, because they know that no one will walk, no one will go to a police station and say, you know what, Auga, arrest me. I just drove in here with my expired, disc. No, that's the reason, they have roadblocks. So it's a sort of more like a regulatory mechanism for it. Although this one said this one is not a roadblock. You guys are just playing hide and seek at this point. Because by the time you see that, those lights, hey, you drive. just take a week of catching a cab. You will see miracles. You see someone who is driving. They're just driving. The moment you see, 3-4 cars that are making a U-turn, they are police officers somewhere.
No, I know. I know. It's some of the cab drivers are fearful for their own particular statuses. We don't know what it is.
Are you kidding me? Those guys have WhatsApp groups.
Serious?
Serious. I am serious. You'll be in a cab. You'll just be sitting there on a cab, and then you see someone. You'll hear someone updating. Voice note. He's driving, right?
Mm.
Yeah. Just watch out at this street. On this street, there's a roadblock. I'm like, yo, these guys are on a whole another level.
So now the police are listening to us, and now they know that the cab drivers have WhatsApp groups.
No, I don't think I don't think that's something they don't know.
Because sometimes even they know each other.
Exactly.
They hang out at the same bars.
It's Friday,
somebody got paid, yes, of course.
The good thing about cab drivers is they get paid every day, so you're good.
Yeah.
Yeah. On the duration and application of EPLs, shortfalls that were pointed out on that part, for me, it points to, again, a regulation which seems to me, from all the reports that I've gone through, especially from financial reporting standpoint, two or three political parties last year had to be deregistered for failing to meet that requirement.
We looked at that report, it was because a lot of them had submitted late financial reports, consecutively even.
Yeah. And that was not just in one financial year. They have been submitting, some of them have been failing to submit for at least a couple of years now.
Which also probably shows in terms of how the enforcement discussion takes place, because last year was the first instance that we actually saw the ECN.
Accountability being.
No, not the accountability aspect. The ECN literally saying, okay, you know what, guys?
That's it.
You guys have been. Sometimes my mother tongue in Afrikaans, you can say things so eloquently, So eloquently and elegantly. Regards to, we've been begging you so much. And then you just go I'm sick and tired of this. Let's make an example of someone.
Do you know where the I'm sick and tired part came in?
Yeah.
Oh, I sent you that script. I have it in that script, believe me. So, thanks to IPPR, I did my excellent homework and found out that, with, there was a change in leadership at ECN. This change
like the one that took place before this election of last year.
In terms of chief executive and referendum officer.
That was 2022,
The previous, the previous guy, I just, I'm just forgetting that gentleman's name, held some kind of, I don't know if I can call it a conference, where he tried to address the political party's reluctance to submitting financial statements on time. I think that was held somewhere in Swakop or Valvis Bay, one of the two. Where he was
But that was the one before the events of last year. That was 2023.
Somewhere there. Where he basically pointed out that... you have to. And according to the, according to the Electoral Act, if you don't, we have measures in place, which now that's the measure that was applied by the successor last year.
Yeah,
that's the now in that interview, I think we can, which you can find in, not in interview like because the whole thing was the whole thing was recorded. I think you can find it on YouTube, where he points out that according to the Electoral Act, if you fail to do this, this is these are the measures that are put in place that the electoral can actually take. But I swear, he goes on to say that, well, but I mean, we don't do that because I'm like, oh, come on, seriously, you're killing me.
Just said now you have the means to do this. But do you know what's the nice thing here, Ahmed? That ECN discussion that you also had, that you now highlighted there, obviously based upon non-compliant entities within a sphere, because the political, I can't call political parties an industry, can I? Even though they do, okay, they do have access to a lot of money.
I have a joke, but it will get us fired.
Okay, no, keep it. Keep it. So, when we look at that discussion, and you highlighted it, the compliance discussion. Now, the word compliance is also in this report in terms of what their hypothesis was. In terms of where they're starting off this discussion, looking at the legal frameworks. When they went to the first chapter? In the first chapter, on point 1.6, the first chapter was adequately titled The Introduction, just giving a background of why, the Auditor General is taking this particular assessment or interest on this particular sector or subsector of the mining sector. 1.6 states that the risk assessment that they weighted, meaning that they observed or that they had to consider, that led to the selection of the subject matter. They explain, the audit was motivated by the following risk of non-compliance that were identified as follows.
Oh, dear Lord.
So it's risk because of non-compliance. What they noted, the very first one was, the current state of legal framework in the mineral sector is outdated. Why am I saying it's outdated? Or why are they saying it's outdated? Because even we know why it's outdated. Well, if I go back way, way, way back to the executive summary, one of the first legislations that they look at in terms of the assessment is obviously the 1992 Act, the Minerals Act, which is also known as Prospecting and Mining Act of 1992. 1992, dear listeners, we're in 2025. 1992.
Yep.
The second one is the Mineral Policy of Namibia, 2003. We're in 2025. It's 22 years later. And then obviously they base most of their discussion, obviously, the Auditor General's powers and most of the discussions come from the State Finance Act of 1991. So even their particular viewpoint of the sector and the powers that they have also potentially has to be considered. Do you know why I say that, Helmut?
Yeah.
First and foremost, the ideas obviously behind increased digitization of data and information. Why do I say that? Many companies have invested, obviously, in e-governance structures, within their organization. So what does the e-governance structure do? It's based upon a notion, or actually we've got an ad break coming up, but it's based, just in a quick nutshell, it's based upon how you can actually generate data on the activity that you're engaging in the
economy. To all Eagle FM listeners, do you want to stand a chance to win a voucher of $500 Namibian weekly? Answer this easy question. Please tell us, what are the three colors of the USAVE logo? Please SMS your answer to 081-200-4144 and tune in every Friday between 1:45 and 2:00 to find out if you are the lucky winner. The winner will be announced every Friday live on air between 1:45 and 2:00. Participate weekly to improve your chance. We'll save at USAVE.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Welcome back. It's 29 minutes left to the hour of 6. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. Now, where were you?
Yeah, so even as the Auditor General's office say literally that, you know, the acts or the legislation or the legal, the laws associated to the sector that they are obviously, you know, generating their report on, investigating, they are also highlighting specifically that an act that empowers them is also a little bit outdated. Because here's one of the weird things, Helmut. The weird thing is obviously that not many people say or speak or highlight legislation has to be updated to stay in tune with the times. The downside has been, why we don't hear this conversation a lot is because we consider that a law or an act, you know, has expanded reach, has infinite relevance. I mean, I read once how in the UK context, there was someone that went and looked at what kind of laws are still active today in 2025. But remember, this was in 2023 when I saw this YouTube video. Yeah. And this guy was shocked to find that there were weird laws still active that the police in the UK can arrest you on. A law for accidentally whistling too loud in your yard. Stuff like that. Or there was an act specifically if you did something weird with a bicycle this act was generated in the 1800s. But these things are just lying there. They're these dormant acts. They just lie there.
Now, obviously, they start whistling from your house. That's when they start popping up.
But it was also the legislation that Donald Trump tapped into for his tariff discussion. He went and tapped into the tariffs, into the tariff legislation, to give himself the necessary executive power or rationale to say, I am enacting these executive orders based upon
an emergency.
Because, and that's a perceived emergency. Remember, he was just inaugurated in, but he told everyone in his election campaigning, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
So that means his legal team or whoever, his political advisors already looked up these acts. And these acts are still active in the US. They looked up these legislations and he used them. He's literally said, this is the emergency I'm stating that I observe is an emergency. And based upon that emergency, I'm going to enact this particular political move, which has profound economic impacts. Now, Donald Trump, back in last month, was taken to court as a president by small business owners who were importing businesses. Remember the Supreme Court and the High Court discussions?
Yeah.
The one court found Donald Trump sort of like he made an illegal move. Then the appeal, it went to an appeals court before going to the ultimate court, with the highest court in the country. And it's these particular arguments that were based upon, you know, does he have the legality to enact something like that when you actually don't see a threat?
Yeah.
Now, the act he used was from 1812 was the 1812 one, because it was probably based upon the war of 1812 that the English had with the Americans in Canada. It was the Canada-US border. It was literally there where the US and Canada border on each other on the Great Lakes. And that it was a particular act that was based upon protecting US industrial interests and sectors from external foreign companies that could try and own the sector, or who could sell at a better price.
Coming out of the 19th century?
Yes. So, remember that example I gave you about the Smith and Wesson guys that were banned from, they were banned from bringing out a newer version of a rifle, a firearm, and a bullet. Remember the white smoke that I explained to you?
Mm-hmm.
The one that obviously saw Shaka Zulu beating the British there in KwaZulu-Natal in that one, in that famous fight.
Yeah, because they kept marking themselves.
No, it wasn't marking themselves. Remember, this was a pitched battle. This is open battle warfare. We see each other. There is no...
Yeah, that's until the smoke comes in when everyone is firing.
Yeah, but the British were wearing red coats. So that's before they changed to that khaki color, which was then when they had the Anglo-Boer Wars in at the start of the 20th century, just before the First World War.
And who actually sat and thought that red was perfect camouflage with the jungle?
No, but they didn't have camouflage tactics. Helmut, the British, the previous British colonial uniform was black trouser, a red coat, that's why they were known as the red coats, and a white hat.
Yeah, I think I've seen those ones.
Now, a white hat in, if I can say, in the sun, obviously can hide you, but not the red coat, because you see a column of red coming to you. You can literally see the guys from far. Now, the downside was, that was where the first instances of protectionism come through. But protectionism was actually way older, because I did protectionism on my Sunday morning take not 2 Sundays back, but the Sunday before that Sunday that, you know, I had a little bit of a breather, because of, you know, doing events on the Saturday night. The protectionism discussion were things that the British brought in. You highlighted one, why they stopped the Atlantic slave trade. It wasn't
It wasn't because they all of a sudden grew a moral,
you know, and,
a moral compass.
And they were feeling, you know, that everyone's rights must be protected.
No,
they didn't. They tried to break the American agricultural industry.
Yeah, because it was the US was an emerging competitor.
Mm. And they were also trying to break the Spanish and Portuguese interests in South America.
Yeah, it's basically everything you see the US trying to do to China today.
Yeah. So, in that sense, you could identify, okay, so foreign policy was all about international trade intimidation, which is the whole theme that we're seeing today.
Yeah.
Now, on this landscape, you now cascade that thing downwards in terms of the legislation that remember, those guys brought in acts back then for events that impacted them back then. Those acts are still active today.
That's when it comes to, you know, some of the oldest laws influencing our society today.
Yeah.
No, that's not the oldest, because international law, especially public international law, is still being influenced by the doctrines of discovery today.
Mm.
That and the doctrine of discovery, we're talking about the 1400s.
Yeah.
When
Henry the Navigator was the first particular. They were one of the first Europeans to say, "Listen, we have to see what is outside of Europe.
Yep.
To see if there's not any particular trade potential or for us to accumulate some sort of external wealth and bring it inwards.
Yep.
Remember when I keep saying Europe is a resource poor continent.
So they have to get it somewhere.
They have to get it somewhere. They industrial, even how their industrial revolutions occurred, right, was based upon someone had to go get resources from somewhere and bring it here for you to have a factory running.
You know what I said about African leaders yesterday?
No.
If World War III starts and we all get blown to smithereens, Africa is to blame because we keep supplying the uranium.
It's not just the uranium.
It's not rocket science.
We also go and smile and say, yes, we would like the development funding. What do you want us to do?
Yeah, or you know, by the way, you're funding the African Union. Excellent.
Excellent.
Do you mind funding us individually as a country?
No.
Oh, but I'm already funding the African Union. Well, that means...
oh, and they're also already giving... They're also funding the African Union Development Bank. The African Development Bank. For it to achieve its development initiatives.
But we don't want political influence. You have got to be kidding me.
But you want their money.
Yeah. I mean, what's the most useless equivalent of this? Yes, excellent. I got one. Yeah. I like you, but it's a brother. Really? No! Can you buy me a chocolate? Absolutely not. Look, I have four sisters. What made you think I want to add on that?
Or like some days you are my love and the other days you are just that guy.
I don't like
when it's your payday, it's my love. When it's any other time in the month, nah, that guy.
I'm getting a new SIM card.
You are my friend.
Some of this.
Life is lively. Life is brutal. I know.
I know how we like to say, you know, comically that this life no balance. Actually, this life have never balanced.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay, so when you look at this whole thing, okay, now there's one piece that I wanted to actually dive in. Oh, Yebo, page 5. You know, one thing I like about these reports is just how they keep pointing out over and over to me that on paper, we have everything spot on. Practical on the other hand.
Mm.
Now, what am I talking about? No. The awarding process of mineral license, EPLs and mining license, obviously there's a, obviously there's a process now. For those of you that wanted to know what the process is, if you want to get yourself a mineral license, mineral license or EPL or mining license, MME, the licensing process in Namibia is administered by obviously the Ministry of Mines and Energy, and specifically through the Mineral Rights and Resource Development Division. Key steps, three main steps. Step one, application, submit an application. Step two, evaluation of the process. Step three, community consultations. Now that's my favorite, community consultation, which I feel like ooze lithium guys did, made a significant part of the miscommunication that took place that led to the alleged, illegal, allegations of illegal mining, taking place in, taking place in Uis that would see, a standing committee that were just like, we're tired of hearing this. We're just going to go there and try to see, who's at fault here. It's like it's like having kids and then they keep making noise in their room. No, this one started this one. Then you just wake up at, 3 in the morning. I'm not listening to who started what. I'm just going to come over there and, jail time. Corporal punishment.
Why would you just stop? Okay. You already said it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. The prospective miners must submit a detailed application, including... Dude, I don't see myself applying for a mining license anytime soon. Listen to this. The prospective miners must submit a detailed application, including geological data. Hey? And proposed exploration methods and environmental management plans.
Yeah.
Let's just stop at geological data. That does not happen to mean some of those things like, seismic survey, does it?
Well,
because if that's what it means, then I don't think I'm getting in this business. And then evaluation and approval applications are evaluated based on technical and financial criteria. All right. Again, I'm out. Successful applicants are granted license, which are subject to a periodic renewal and compliant with specific conditions. Now, that's what takes us to the second page of duration and application for several and for renewal and the exclusive prospective licenses. Yes, well, the requirements are, even if you are given a license, it's subject to renewal.
Yeah.
At this point, I can't help but ask one question. Who's in charge of making sure that everything is being renewed on time?
But that's also the particular question I'm with.
Yeah, because clearly on the first part, on the page two, on the duration and application, the entity that's in charge of making sure that the renewal are done on time, the effectiveness there has a lot of question marks.
Yes, because here's the discussion. Let's, for example, say something's already operating and running, yeah, and there was a time frame, and there's a renewal period within that time frame. But the renewal takes place after the time on the process has lapsed. But in between, you're still paying salaries and the activity is still going on.
Yeah.
Now, one of the reasons why potentially something that would come up like that, or a scenario would present itself like that,
yeah,
is the discussion of financial years. We know when the government's financial year begins and ends.
Yeah.
We don't know when where each company in this country's financial years start and end.
Well, the short answer to that is that they don't have one. No, each company has its own different date.
Yeah, they have their own different date.
Yeah.
So they are not in tune with the government's financial year. The government's financial year is to look at, you know, what would be done across the country, projects, our projects discussions,
yeah,
and the impacts of these projects to local Namibians. To a private sector company, it's about for them to submit their financials at NAMRA, or before NAMRA, it was the Ministry of Finance Internal Revenue Division or Department. Because it was about them being told, you know, complying with a scenario of, are all receipts there? Are all your paperwork there, and have you finalized everything potentially that was outstanding? And then all that the ministry does is just check, okay, did you comply with your stuff? Did you pay what you were supposed to pay? They look at that cross-reference things and they go like, okay, fine, yes, or a scenario of, hey, there's something here. There's something here. Explain, please explain. Okay, you want to defer this to the next financial year? For sure, let's do that. Or like what has been also been some of the discussions of where many Namibians have also been going haywire has been that notion of the, what do they call that thing? When the exemption periods for paying corporate taxes, certain corporate taxes. Because the mine was in care and maintenance, or the mine was not producing.
I don't want to say decommissioning.
No, because decommissioning,
is out and, now we're just crossing shore because we're out of the resources.
Yeah. But it was that care and maintenance actually tries to explain the not operating period, which has been what two of the uranium mines at the coast had been for some part before this year, before 2024 as well. And I mean, that was in the discussions of the purchases that were going to take place, meaning they were going to be sold. And two of them obviously were sold obviously to Chinese ownership. Yeah. So in that scenario, the holding company of that mine would say, okay, it goes into care and maintenance. And we're not going to, we can't pay any particular taxes on corporate profits. We can just pay the salary, the taxes on the salaries, But that's as far as it can go. And then you still sit with a discussion of Namibian and some Namibian MPs highlighting in the National Assembly, you know what, why are these companies not paying? But they are paying. And on that note, guys, we've got an ad break.
It's time to win your share of 500,000 Namibian dollars in prizes with Windhoek Beer. Find one of the 100% real quotes broadcast across Namibia on billboards, in stores, in newspapers, and on social media. Buy any Windhoek Beer, SMS the underliner code to 75050, or scan the QR code to enter on WhatsApp. So, spot a quote, grab a Windhoek Beer, and you could win. Windhoek, real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. T's and C's apply.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have the capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. It's 9 minutes left to the hour of six. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM.
Can we quickly take a live read? Yeah. This is the Valvitra University September intake for 2025. All programs are fully accredited by the NQA. Certificate in Health Sciences Foundation Level 4. This is a one-year full-time course available at all campuses. Certificate for Enrolled Nurse Midwife Acushur Level 6. This is a 2 years full-time course available in Windhoek, Nkurunkuru, Kombat, Walvis Bay, Katimamulilu, and Otapi. Diploma in Environmental Health Sciences Level 6. This is a 2 years full-time course available in Windhoek. Bachelor of Nursing and Midwifery Science Honours. This is a 4 years full-time course available in Windhoek, Nkurunkuru, Kombat, Walvis Bay, and Katimamulilu. Postgraduate Diploma in Mental Health Nursing Level 8. This is a 1 year full-time course available in Windhoek. Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing Level 8. This is a 1 year full-time course available in Windhoek. The application period is 1 June to 30 June 2025. For more information, call 061-225-463 or 061-225-462. Velvica University, where everyone is an achiever.
Welcome back. make I point out something. Page 11 has a somewhat of an dilemma. Audit finding prohibition of certain officers on holding certain interest in mineral license or in companies holding mineral licenses. Section 7, subsection 1 to 3 of the Minerals, also known as Prospective and Mining Act 33 of 1992, prohibits the commissioner or any other officer employed in the Ministry of Mines and Energy. Yeah, any other officer employed in the Ministry of Mines and Energy, regardless of their involvement in carrying out the provision of this act, from holding any interest, either directly or indirectly in mineral licenses or in companies holding mineral licenses. However, the audit found that the spousal information of 5 out of 249 officials in the Ministry of Mines and Energy were not provided for audit purpose, hence compliance to section 7 subsection 1 and 2 of the Mineral AKA Prospecting and Mining Act of 1992, and could not be assessed.
So So these guys also partly or partially try to do a, not a lifestyle audit, but an audit in terms of involvement.
It can easily be, fall in the category of a lifestyle audit.
Almost, yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I said it's not entirely, but it's part, it tries to tag on one thing, to try and find how many of you guys that work here in this office have direct interests or stakes in certain
things. Yeah, how many of you are playing both referee and player?
Yeah. Or involved in certain activities in the economy, besides just having this 8-to-5 job.
And then the most painful part now comes in. This is obviously about information, you know, data gathering. Like, we really need to. I think if there's an aspect of our, you know, of running our day-to-day, our country's day-to-day activities that we should start getting technology involved ASAP, is information gathering.
You know, it is. Plus, also understanding how much in terms of the accessibility of this information. Remember, what you just read highlighted that some of these data information sets were withheld. They were not provided. At the bottom of that page, of page 11, there's a commentary provided, an explainer to what you just read.
In italic, right?
Yeah, the italic one. Literally just the first sentence, which outlines, firstly, they start the sentence by saying, no political office bearers, but we're talking about bureaucrats. We're talking about the everyday officials that work in the ministry.
But these reports are amazing. I will give them that.
No, they're even better than the standing committee summary. This is
a gold
against the standing committee. Well, the standing committee once, you know, they sort of like have a, well, we obviously extract a sarcastic humor from it because we realize, well, how do you get volunteers running a facility that was meant for something, but the volunteers have personal private property on a public facility?
Ever fresh.
Ever fresh.
Uh-huh.
Forever.
Yep.
Since 2023.
Uh-huh.
And no one knows who's in charge of the facility.
It's an elixir of life somewhere.
Or we have got the other one, where the other one is standing empty. And no one knows who's supposed to be in charge of this thing.
That's terrible planning.
Yeah.
Now, then it goes on to say that additionally, the auditors observed that the ministry does not have internal control mechanism in place to verify adherence to section 7, the one that prohibits, the one that prohibits the direct or indirect,
ownership. Involvement
of Ministry of Mines officials in everything related to, you know, extractive, basically mining, especially licenses that specifically points out here. Now, this is where you see, this is where you begin to see that, first of all, I did not know this, that these guys are, I actually never thought of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it never actually crossed my mind, not of the, you know, Ministry of Mines officials being prohibited from, participating.
That has also been a large particular accusation, Helmut, that the Namibian media in the Namibian landscape had been making, but we did not know. From what particular legal basis can you make?
Yeah, is it being based?
Can you make this accusation?
It turns out, that piece of legislation goes as far as to point out that, I think this is the indirect part. Even spouses of these officials are not.
Yeah, because it's conflict of interest.
Yeah.
It speaks to conflict of interest.
And when you talk about spouse, on at least from a civil law standpoint, you see that, especially seeing that a lot of people that are getting married don't know the difference between in community and out of community. A lot of them are still getting in community, so it becomes more like a joint estate.
And in community is the default setting.
If you just show up to court, we're going, you know what,
we'd like to get married, Your Honor,
the
you
judge
know?
Will be like,
and then the judge.
Is that all?
Is
yes,
that all?
Right.
Yes,
sign
okay.
Here.
By default, in community. So if you guys argue with each other, remember that each one owns 50-50. Of anything that you guys had built up together in that union.
You have no idea how sad those stories are. That's coming from a comedian. Yeah, so, risks, oh my God, time flies like crazy.
Yeah.
Risks non-disclosure of interest along with the lack of effective monitoring control thereof could result in any officer employed at the Ministry of Mines and Energy to hold certain interests. So this is where like some information seemingly being withheld now raises a lot of red flags, but commercial.
Tune in to the F&B segment every Monday morning from 7:45 a.m. live on Eagle FM for early morning dose of financial education and account protection. The F&B segment is proudly brought to you by F&B Namibia.
Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukulile. Oshafafana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwala. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi tayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onora itatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ileko berewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
Did you know that in Namibia over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards, and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077.
Yeah.
2 minutes, 2 minutes past the hour of six.
And before we end off, guys, there's a wonderful story Helmut wants to tell us.
Here's the thing. Let's just wrap this up, shall we? One, get this report. Two, go to the recommendations. I'm begging you.
Well, there's a bunch of recommendations for every page. So
oh, yeah.
Read them all, guys.
Actually, the first one will get you asking, huh, interesting. I know chances are very high.
Well, this report actually, Helmut, also helps to explain the Uis lithium mining discussion. Remember the media storm before that report?
Yeah.
People were throwing accusations. Yeah, how does a Ministry of Mines employee become, you know, involved in one of the sought after rare earth minerals of the global economy?
Mm-hmm.
And these guys literally said it straight. The legislation is out of date. The act is out of date for the changing times, and that there are gaps where literally you can see
can be exploited,
conflicts of interests, because there's no restriction on the ownership discussions, which could involve government employees.
Yo, but the spouse, yo.
But it, and
I mean, I looked at that and went like, you.
But this hell even means, Hamid, that this report cements the suspicions that many Namibians out in the economy have had of government employees, of civil servants, of public workers.
No, playing both.
They get jobs in the public sector for self enrichment. They're not there to do the job. They are there for self enrichment. And this is not even on questions of, you know, call the ACC left, right, and center. No, you look at. Not the moral of the story. I can't sound like someone that's in primary school. You look at the essence of what you see is happening in the Namibian economy.
Mm-hmm.
The other day, there was another engagement that I went to. And I mean, this is just an observation of some of the government workers. It was yesterday. And I'm sorry, the Ministry of Education guys. I'm sorry for throwing you under the bus on this one. Those guys were driving better cars than even some of the employees that work at the banks. Huh? Helmut? They're driving better cars than some of the employees that work at the banks.
But, well, that's because, well, you have, you know, in the one thing we have learned from 2020, one strike of some entity I won't mention because I don't have bodyguards, is that the strike.
Now we all know who that was.
The strike was initiated by, you know, angry, you know, employees looking at the executive guys getting not only rises, but also.
They got a bonus.
You know, they got a, you know, bonus and, you know, a 1. Something million dollar vehicle, and everyone went like, hang on a second. When last was our salary raised again?
And then they looked at themselves and they went like, but we've got a whole bunch of us that are on temporary contracts for eternity with
and
no...
And that guy is getting this and Smith is not meeting. Now, clarify ownership structure is one of the juiciest recommendations you find in that report, and that's on the third page.
Yeah.
Clarify report. So, you know, and I totally agree with that. And this is, you know, why I like, you know, how the USA, you know, basically has its database. Like, it's very easy to find, you know, it's very easy to find which politicians has shares in which company.
No, but Donald Trump has taken that clarify ownership structures discussion to a new level by being literally bribed by another country with a jumbo.
Well, I think one thing...
with a personal plane helmet.
Okay, one thing we should... okay, this is how I view Donald Trump. Have you seen The Big Bang Theory?
Yes, I'm.
Now, do you know the Sheldon Cooper character?
Yes,
I'm. Exactly. Now, that's Donald Trump.
He only listens to himself.
Yeah, that's one. Two...
he thinks very little of other people.
Three.
Yeah.
He has the ability to offend you without realizing he has offended you. Which is why, hang on a second. Trump was visited by the current German chancellor.
Merz,
Back
in last month. At the end of last month.
Yeah, I'm glad
that,
you saw that.
That week that we
I'm
got
paid. I'm glad you saw that.
No, I saw it. I didn't listen to the engagement because...
That guy is savage.
Who, Merz?
Because...
No, Merz didn't care what Trump said.
He showed up with with Donald Trump's grandfather's... You know, a copy of a birth certificate to show him that, Hoga,
you are German.
You're also not from here.
Okay, that part I didn't watch because I was like...
Oh, no, you should look it
up. Because Merz was like, you know what, I don't care about this engagement. You know, I'm just here.
Yeah, even if you look it up, you see where they're sitting, where they're sitting in the White House.
Mm.
There's this sort of like a giant, more like a giant, what looks like a frame of a portrait that Merz is holding, Yeah, that's someone's grandfather's birth certificate.
And Trump was going on about his Scottish ancestry because he's must got a golf course and a hotel at that. One of the PGA golf tournaments occurs or happens at his golf course in Scotland. What is that course's name? He's most a huge golf player, Trump.
And that guy knows how to humble politicians. At least that's
and,
one.
And then one politician showed up and humbled him back.
I think Homeboy was following the story of how Zelensky was treated, how Macron has to be like on his toes to try to,
That's the thing with Macron. Macron didn't go to Trump. Trump met him in France and Macron went like,
so it's one of those things.
We're together,
establishing dominance.
Yeah, it's an unnecessary power play that doesn't mean anything, but yeah. I mean, it just makes you famous for 10 seconds on BBC, CNN, and...
That's it.
Yeah, that's as far as it goes.
The German chancellor was like, look, we invented precision. The Japanese are arguing with that. But our cars are used the most, questionable though it may be, but they are used the most. 8 minutes
past... Well, it depends on where it's being used. But yeah, 8 minutes... past six, and let's hand over to David. David wants us to bounce because he knows we might get carried away here with our own.
I know.
With our own trailer and double cab of something.
I know some shareholders somewhere in Tokyo are going, man, let this war start.
Which war? Which war?
You know, in the Middle East. Make it bigger.
They would actually want the Yemenis one to continue because. It's must the Yemen one that embarrassed an Abrams tank most.
Oh man.
On a single cab Land Cruiser buggy.
Japanese engineering one. All right, y'all hanging tight. David is coming in. coming in first with the business and economic segment. For me, until Monday.
And for me, until Sunday. Let's see each other again, guys.
Until tomorrow, actually. You'll have a good one.
And enjoy the rest of your programming for the rest of this weekend.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.